Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, April 26th, 2012. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. Well, this week we continue our look at the emerging local beer scene here in Northwest Arkansas with a visit to the Tanglewood Branch Beer Company in Fayetteville. Photojournalist turned professional brewer and pub owner J.T. Wampler talks about his taking his home brewing passion to the next level. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And our new 2012 Brewer's Logbooks are still in stock. The supplies are getting smaller, though. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. And we have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook as well, facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link at our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. And you can now find our Basic Brewing iPhone and Android podcast apps on the respective stores. And the Android podcast app is also on Amazon. And we're on the BlackBerry podcast directory. And we're on the Stitcher app as well. I've now brewed a second batch of beer to evaluate as part of the Brew Your Own Magazine Basic Brewing Radio collaborative experiment on secondary fermenters. This time it's a hoppy pale ale. No big surprise there, to go along with the Belgian Amber that's already in the basement. And believe it or not, I've already received some data from a brewer who is participating in the experiment as well. Mark Raker from Potomac, Maryland, has weighed in with the results of splitting a cream ale and transferring half of that to the secondary, leaving the other half on the primary for the duration of the fermentation time. And no spoilers, his results appear to be similar to mine. So the deadline to submit your data is May 21st. So I'm looking forward to what the rest of you are finding out as well. I got a bit of news from Dave down in Tatura, Victoria, Australia. I believe that's where Dave is. According to reports that Dave forwarded, Cooper's Brewery has purchased Mr. Beer. Now, some may be saying, well, there's another American beer company that's gone over to foreign ownership, but but this could be a good thing. According to the press release, the Mr. Beer brand would be retained along with its existing 2 U.S. gallon or 8-liter microbrew kits. However, American customers would notice some subtle changes aimed at improving the quality of the beer they produced. According to the report, we will replace the current malt extracts with a superior quality all malt concentrate produced at Cooper's with a yeast specifically designed for their size kit. This will remove the need for a sugar adjunct and will significantly improve the quality of beer that is produced. That's according to the press release. So that sounds like the end of the Mr. Beer booster bag with all that corn sugar, maybe. If so, that is likely a very good thing. I mean, we've complained about those things here on this podcast and with our video podcast as well. And that's the biggest complaint that I've had about the Mr. Beer kits. That booster we've experienced, it tends to give the beer a cidery flavor. So I'm hoping that that the new recipe will improve the quality of the beer coming out of the Mr. Beer kits. According to the reports, Mr. Beer sold more than 200,000 kits in the U.S. in 2011. 200,000. That is a lot of potential more advanced home brewers. And if the Mr. Beer recipe can be improved, like they say, I hope that they'll be more likely to stick around to the hobby and, you know, grow out of that Mr. Beer mold to become better brewers with more advanced techniques. So, good for them. Now let's move on to our conversation. It's a shorter one this week. That's what she said. J.T. Wampler is an award-winning photographer, and he's usually a man of few words. So on the day that I visited with him, not only was he trying to brew, but he had to deal with repairmen and delivery people, and, you know, he was being an owner of a pub. He's very busy, so I'm grateful that he did take as much time that he did. Now, this is an installment of a continuing conversation that we're having about the growth of local craft beer here in Northwest Arkansas, and I see us as kind of a microcosm maybe of what's happening across the country and I hope across the world. And as we see with our conversations with brewers across the country, the same is happening here. Each local brewer has a different strategy to get their beer to market and into the glasses of consumers. Some have grand visions of how they're going to do that, and some want to start small and maybe even stay small. I think JT probably fits into the latter category. I caught up with him next to his mash tun in the back of Tanglewood Branch. JT Wampler, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks, James. Thanks for having me.
Now, you and I go back a little ways, sort of. We were both working in the journalism world up here back in the late 80s. I was in TV, and you were a still photographer for the newspaper, and I don't remember getting in each other's way too much.
No, I don't remember that either. Wasn't as many TV guys back then as there is now, though.
So. We were all one-man bands back then. You know, we did it all ourselves. So these kids today, they don't know how good they got it. But you were still in the world of journalism up until fairly recently.
September
2011. So Tell me what the evolution of that decision was to jump out of the news world and into the beer world.
Well, my good friend John Collier has been trying to get me to enjoy craft beers for a decade almost, and I finally broke down and said, okay, how do you make this stuff? And after a couple of kits from Andy's homebrew store, I went out and did an all-grain brew with him. And as soon as I smelled the mash, I was having some ancestral memory or something. I knew this is what I need to do with my life. I need to smell this as often as possible. I need to create fermentable sugars. So I started thinking and plotting and scheming, and about 2.5 years later, here we are.
So we're sitting in the Tanglewood Branch Beer Company, and tell us about how you picked this location and how this turned into what it is.
Well, I was looking at South Fayetteville for the brewery because South Fayetteville doesn't have anything like this at all. No pubs, few restaurants outside of Thai food and soul food. And so I looked at South Fayetteville, and I ran across this gas station that was for lease. And I called up, and I got the landlord all excited about the project, and he got the owners all excited about the project, and they gave me a very favorable lease.
So it's a former convenience store gas station, and it's a building that, you know, I had seen driving by, and I never would have thought that it would have turned into something as cool as this. Talk about the transformation, what you did.
Well, it was a challenge. We had 33 days construction time to take this building from gutted, recently demolded because of some pipe bursting issues, and as soon as they certified us mold free, we came in with my crew, part paid, mostly volunteer, and for 33 days we gutted the floor, put in all new drains, painted, added all the walls you see, everything. It was completely gutted, and 33 days later we were opening.
And you started out as not a brew pub, right, but just a beer. How would you describe the business?
Well, I was looking to do a neighborhood pub in the tradition of England, where every little block had a pub and the neighbors all walk in on their daily routine. And so I was looking to get that going before the brewery. That's why there's no windows into the brewery. Nobody even knew this was going to be a brewery for the first 3-4 months until the federal paperwork started coming through. We were just a pub, neighborhood pub. The neighbors have really responded well. We get a lot of walk-in and bicycle traffic. And there's a lot of good peeps on the south side, and they enjoy it.
And you're close to the square,
and you're close to the bike route. I mean, there's a bike trail that goes through the city, and you give discounts for bike riders. Is that right?
Yeah, we got special permission from the ABC to have a happy hour based on your mode of arrival. And as far as I can tell, it's completely unique in Arkansas. If you don't take up one of my parking spaces with a car or a motorcycle, you get a beer for half price.
That's awesome. I wish I could bike from Prairie Grove, but and that's the that's what has kept me. I mean, you know, I've been in here a few times, but I would be here a lot more if it was down the street from my house, because it is a family friendly. It's not a bar per se, although you have awesome beers on tap.
We work pretty hard to keep the word bar out of our vernacular, because we're not a bar. A bar to me is whiskey and people getting as trashed as they can, as fast as they can. So we're a pub. We're very much a pub. There's board games. There's no TV. We prize conversation over digital distractions. But that being said, we're a 21st century pub. We have the highest speed internet you can buy. So if you want to watch TV, you can bring your device and watch TV on your own without bothering everybody else. And I've had more people, overwhelmingly more people, say, no TV, keep the TV out, than the ones that lament and say, oh, we need to watch the game. I politely say, you know, if you just have to watch the game and you don't have a device, there's plenty of bars to go watch a game at. Where the bar you go to if you don't want the TV blaring at you.
Right. And you've got live entertainment?
We do. We started that late last fall, and it's proved to be very successful.
And so you have you started out with awesome beers on tap. In fact, I don't think you have any big boy bad beers, do you?
Not on tap. We started with Miller High Life on tap, but I got to the point where it was embarrassing to have one tap up there that was not American craft beer, so we have that in cans now. And no bottles, except for a couple of gluten-free brands that only come in bottles, because we're trying to keep our footprint, our trash footprint, small. Mm-hmm. So we do cans and give them to the local neighborhood that goes and scraps them and recycles them.
And talk about your food.
Our food is been a surprising hit. I never intended to sell as much food as we are, but I hired my sister, Kathleen McGill, and she's a farmer's market vendor herself, and so she has an inside track on all the best stuff from the market and the local farming community. And so we source, if we can source it from the farmer's market, we do. And we don't own a freezer, nor do we own a microwave, so everything is fresh made and made from scratch, slow, or we don't do it. There's nothing instant about any of our food.
But yet your kitchen is pretty low-tech, right?
It's amazingly low-tech. We go off of three crock pots and a panini grill.
But it works.
Yeah, people really have responded well to the food. They enjoy the slow cooking aspect of it. And we're not fast food. I mean, you come in here, you're going to get your sandwich fairly quickly, but you don't have time to linger over a pint while you're waiting for it.
And Monday is a special event.
Monday's our biggest day, surprisingly enough. We call it Beer and Bacon Happy Hour, which has evolved now to Beer, Bacon, and Jazz Happy Hour, because we have a jazz group come in and play every Monday. And it's turned into our biggest night. In fact, the last Monday was the biggest night we've had yet.
So you've established your business, and now you, I mean, I helped you a little bit this morning as you mashed in. We're waiting on the mash right now for a big IPA. You tell us about the process of getting your license and what that was like to go through.
Well, we opened doors on September 27th, 2011, and I intended to have our federal paperwork ready to file before that, but there was some snags and some hang-ups on my end, not the feds at all. But we didn't end up even filing our paperwork till Christmas Eve. And at that point, it starts a 90-day clock ticking with the feds. They have 90 days to respond to you one way or the other. And in our case, it took about 105 days to get approved. So we went over a little bit, but they were very helpful. Once they finally got my application in front of them, they were incredibly helpful and very easy to deal with. Mary Duncan was our federal agent, and she was just a pleasure to deal with.
So you would think that the federal government would want your tax dollars and would want to help you along on that. What was the biggest roadblock? I mean, if there are homebrewers out there who are looking to go through this process, what's your biggest piece of advice along those lines?
hire a good attorney who knows the process. My attorney, we learned the process together, and that was a little bit of the stumbling blocks we had, was we just weren't sure what to do. And the federal paperwork is intense and kind of arduous to go through. We thought we were ready to go at one point, and then we saw one little sentence at the end of the directions. Oh, by the way, you need this. Yeah. And that set us back 3 weeks collecting all that information. So I think the best thing to do would be to hire a good attorney and have them deal with the federal government.
So what kinds of things do they ask for specifically?
Well, they need diagrams of the place. They need what your water quality is going to be coming out, going into the wastewater. They approve your name, even. If they don't like the name you've chosen, then you start from square one again. You have to rename the place. So we looked into what names they like to approve. And the ones that get almost automatic approval are the names when you link your name to a local site, like a mountain or a river or a street. And the Tanglewood Branch is a little tiny creek that runs from Dixon Street down to Walker Park in Fayetteville. And I like the name, I like the imagery, and it led to a really good logo, and they didn't even blink at it.
And so you've got your, if we can imagine what a convenience store is like, the brewery is sort of in the, was this the storage room back here, or what was this?
I'm not sure what this was. We gutted the building. There was no walls here, and we had 2,600 square feet, and we almost divided it in half. There's slightly more seating than there is brewery. There's about 1,100 square feet of brewery and kitchen. Everything else is seating and bathrooms. And another asset this building had that was very attractive was a walk-in cooler that's 12 feet long and 50 feet wide. It's real, the old doors where you open the doors to get your Cokes out of the convenience store. We just walled over the doors. And the cooler is still only two-thirds full.
Yeah, it's got lots of kegs back there now. And that was genius. I mean, when you showed me that, I was like, oh, that's awesome, because you lead your taps right from that to the bar. And then, you know, all you're doing cold conditioning back there now, and I imagine that that's going to be an integral, important part of the whole operation. But the brewery, talk about the brewing setup that you've got right now.
We're brewing on the pilot system right now. It's old kegs reconditioned into an electric hot liquor tank and an insulated mash tun with a braided stainless steel manifold. And then my original piece of brewing equipment from when I homebrewed is my old Coors keg that we cut the top off of and made it into a kegel. And I've produced several hundred gallons of beer out of this thing now. But the brewery is designed to be a 7-barrel system. So we have room in the hot room for the grain and 300-gallon tanks. And then in the fermentation room, which at this point is just an empty room with insulated walls, we have room for 14 250-gallon conicals in there. And the interesting thing about our space is we can mezzanine up with another layer if we need to and go vertically with another 20 tanks.
Wow.
Should we expand that big. I don't know if we will or not. My only aspiration is to be a wee humble pub on the corner in South Fayetteville. If it goes crazy and we have to expand, then so be it. But that's not what we're looking to do.
You will accept success if it is presented to you.
Indeed, we will.
So you've started out humble, but you have a plan to expand and to get larger. How did you get this far as funding? What was your strategy? Because we all know how highly paid newspaper photographers are, and so what was your strategy in getting over that first hump?
Well, we incorporated the business in June of last year, and at that point, I set out seeking like-minded individuals who wanted to invest. And we sold 49 shares of 100 shares total. And that financed the entire construction and initial inventory, not including the brew equipment, which I already had. And so we're going to brew on the small system until we either save enough money or we find some more investors to buy the 7-barrel system, which I'm going to build out of old dairy tanks. I'm not going to buy the new brewing system. I'm going to piece it together out of old Wisconsin dairy tanks.
And so is there, I mean, so you've got 51% ownership, you've got the controlling ownership, but is it an overall positive or a negative that you have so many owners or so many, you know, kind of, do you see it as like chefs in the kitchen with you, or are they silent partners, or how do you look at that?
Everyone understood from the beginning that all I needed from them was money and support. They come down, they spend money, and they're all very loyal customers, but I need them to stay out of my way in the brewery. And they all tasted my beer, and they know that it's going to be sellable product, and so they've stayed out of my way, basically. Sometimes they drop off pieces of art or things that they think that would look good in the pub, and we take them or we don't take them, depending on what they look like. But so far, it's been a very good group of people to work with.
Yeah, I've talked to people in the past who have been planning to open breweries, and they, you know, they start huge. You know, they start with a blue sky wish list of the stuff that they want, and sometimes they don't get that, and they don't get to go into business. So it looks like to me, I mean, you're going to start selling your own beer on May 7th, right? I mean, you're there. I mean, you've got the foothold, and you, it's all up to you at that point to start building your name recognition, building your brand, and proving to the public that you can make good beers. You know, it seems to me that that's, like I say, you've got a foothold in the wall, and you're on the way up.
Yeah, we have 20 taps on the wall, and I only plan on taking 6 for my beers. So we have a good selection of handcrafted artisan ales, just not handcrafted here, from Avery and from Pangea. It's a who's who of what's available in Northwest Arkansas on my wall. Mm-hmm. And people have really responded to that. We've sold, I'd have to say, 10 times more $6 pints of British Fuller's ESB than we have Miller High Light in the cans. People come here for good beer, and they come here to spend money on good beer. Mm-hmm. And that's the customers I'm looking for, because they're going to transition to my beer just fine.
So it's opening day is kind of intimidating, I would assume. What's your lineup going to be on May 7th if people come in?
What I know for sure I'm going to have is a brown ale, a porter, an English-style IPA, an American-style IPA, and an original creation I call Proper 1420. It's an amber English type ale, but I can't fit it into any of the categories, so I just call it a Shire ale.
Are you planning on getting it? Those are some pretty established categories, styles. Are you planning to get more adventurous as time goes on?
Indeed. We'll do some big Belgian seasonals. I do a triple that I conditioned for 6 months on rum-soaked raisins. Mm-hmm. Call it Rum Raisin Triple. And people always love that around the holidays. And we'll do some light. I've got a light blonde we're going to test out this summer. It's going to be changing. We change our beer menu about 3 times a week here anyway with other people's beer, and I suspect it's going to be even more than that when mine's on tap.
Yeah, you're brewing. You have the flexibility brewing small, brewing 10-gallon batches that you can tweak your recipe. I mean, that's one advantage in brewing at this scale is that you essentially have focus groups coming in that you can talk to right there at the bar, and you can sort of tweak those recipes or evolve those recipes as needed.
Exactly, and that's one of the reasons we started a small pub on the corner instead of a production-type brewery, because I want to talk to the people that are drinking the beer and find out what I'm doing right, find out what I'm doing wrong, find out what they're responding to before we have the big system. Mm-hmm. And that way, once we have the big system, it'll just be a matter of putting out what people want.
So today, is today a typical day? I mean, I came in here, there's guys working on the air conditioner, we had the beer delivery, we had somebody coming in, you know, with an application, or, you know, you're trying to get the beer started, you're trying to get this and that and the other, and it seems to me to be a very exhilarating, let's say, you know, operation, or, you know, being this small and being this hands-on. Does it always go this kind of hectic?
With the exception of the air conditioner, yeah, it's pretty much a typical day. We're just getting that fixed today because summer months are coming and we're going to need some cool air in here. But yeah, the beer deliveries and all that. And over the last 3 to 5 months, I've been running everything myself. But the last month or so, I've been in the brewery more, and I'm transitioning away from the day-to-day operations. Eventually, we're going to bring in a manager to handle pretty much all of the day-to-day stuff, the hiring, the scheduling, the bills, and that's going to give me time to be in the brewery where I need to be.
So you, a lot of times when people start a brewery, they wind up being the business manager, but you're wanting to stay hands-on and stay in the back and keep making the beer.
Yes, I that's where I need to be, is in the brewery. My talents are better suited here than up front.
Tell us about the beer you're brewing today.
Well, I'm trying a new recipe today. It's a big IPA using Maris Otter, Cara VN, Cara 20, and a little honey malt, which is the first time I've used that. My hops are Nugget and Willamette, and I've never used Nugget as an aroma hop before, so we're going to see how that comes out. I really like the smell, though, so I hope good things for this beer.
Yeah, it looks good to me. And you're starting gravity of, what, 1070, 1071,
something like that? 1070 original gravity.
And you hit your mash temperature right on your starting temperatures?
Right on 150.
Now, this talk about your specifically. You've got you're on an electric hot liquor tank, and then talk about your system.
The hot liquor tank was something I bought off a home brewer that got out of the business, and it's got an electric heating element, much like a hot water tank does, with a thermostat, and I just set the temperature, fill it up, and plug it in, and it goes. And then my mash tun is an old Anheuser-Busch keg that I put a fitting on and a braided stainless steel manifold. And I ran a stainless steel spring through the middle of that, so it's crush-proof, basically. I usually get about 79% efficiency. When I checked, I stopped checking a while ago because it's always right around there. And then the boil kettle is my old Coors keg, which at this point I'm so fond of, I don't think I'll ever get rid of it. That's my workhorse right there.
Well, and like you said, this is your pilot system. So you basically had to tell the feds you had to tell them that this was your pilot system.
Yeah.
And so that's how you kind of get around that.
Well, they don't really care what size system you're using. They just want to know what it is, and mm-hmm. that your tanks all have to have indelible marks on them saying what their capacity is. And luckily, kegs have that printed in stainless steel. So, no, they were very helpful, and they really don't care what the size system is. They just want to know.
Now, we're in an environment where, we've talked to a core brewing company. West Mountain up on the square started brewing their own beer. We've got the Hog House, which we've talked about in the show before, which is a brew pub down on Dixon Street. We've got Saddleback. We've got Fossil Cove. There are a couple others, aren't there? I mean,
in the works.
It seems like that we're about to have an explosion of fresh, locally made craft beer. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I love it. I think the more of us, the better. It's going to add to the beer culture around Fayetteville, and I would like to see Fayetteville become a beer destination like Asheville, North Carolina, or the Bay Area of San Francisco. Beer festivals, people coming here for touring all the breweries. I think it's the more the better.
Yeah, I agree. I can't wait. And there's some other things, going on that you'll hear about later on the show, I hope. But we've got something good going on in Northwest Arkansas, and it's about time. I mean, it seems like with all the home brewers that are around here, and we've got a good Andy's got a good homebrew shop here, which is kind of the hub of the homebrewing community, and the good Flops is the homebrew club. It's just a matter of time, I think, until something like this happened, and I'm happy it's started.
Me too. It's a great thing for the Northwest Arkansas community.
One last piece of advice. What would you say to homebrewers who are looking to do something like this?
Take a nice portrait of yourself and hang it up at your house in case your family forgets what you look like. So you're going to spend a lot of time doing the business one way or the other. I was here for 5 months as a manager, daily operator, and then now I'm in the brewery every day. And just don't neglect your family.
Somebody once told me that once you go into business for yourself, you can only work half days. 12 hours.
Yeah. The first 6 weeks I worked, there were 16-hour days.
Wow.
But then I was working every shift. I was cooking, I was bartending, I was waiting, I was cleaning up at the end of the night. And now I'm in the brewery a good 10 hours a day.
Well, awesome. You're where you need to be. I'm glad to see it. I appreciate it. I appreciate your taking time out in your busy schedule to talk to us. And good luck to you, JT.
Well, it's always a pleasure, James. And Basic Brewing was a big inspiration and a huge help over the years listening. I think I've neglected listening to the last few months, but up until then, I was a loyal listener.
We'll forgive you if you'll, you know, give us good beer.
I intend to.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again to JT. After we talked, I bellied up to the bar and ordered an Italian sandwich, which was JT's invention, with pesto that his sister made with fresh basil from the Fayetteville Farmers Market, and it was really good. The only way you can get pesto fresher than that would be to make it yourself. Tanglewood Branch reminds me a lot of the Keg and Barrel down in Hattiesburg, Mississippi that we visited a while back. A very intimate, low-key neighborhood pub with great food and great beer. And I'm really looking forward to sampling JT's beers up here. Now, remember, his big debut is May 7th. So if you're in the neighborhood, show him some support on May 7th. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com. Or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site along with our Brewer's Logbook, which is now available to order. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps Pure Castile Soap, All One Hemp Peppermint, 5 ounce bars, pack of six. And Uncle Jim's Worm Farm, 1,000 count Red Wiggler live composting worms. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. And don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association or subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.